Disclaimer, the views and opinions you hear on this show are not the opinions of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. From Orange County, California, I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to AnCast. Justin's on vacation this week, so joining me in the co-host chair is Answer Man himself, Brian Hansen. Hey, Brian.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How's it going, Zach?
Pretty good. Can't complain. Don't really have too much to complain about. We've had a couple of good shows lately, stirred up a lot of shit, as it were.
That's why I'm here, to not stir up any controversy at all.
Well, then the ratings are going to go down.
I'll make some moe joke or something somewhere at some point. Just tell me when to drop it in the time code.
Will do. So how have you been? I haven't talked to you in a little while.
Yeah, me neither. I haven't seen you in a while. I've been pretty good. We just wrapped our sketch comedy show at the theater I do some work with last week, and that was a lot of fun. I've just been doing a lot of writing lately. I'm trying to put together another show pretty much from scratch that's all complicated and ridiculous and depressing and funny, hopefully all at the same time. We'll see how that goes.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'm really, like, kind of excited that you're actually doing that stuff because, you know, I've known you for... what, like 7 or 8 years now?
Yeah.
You know, for a brief period, we went to college together, and mm-hmm. you were actually in my sketch comedy show very briefly.
that was fond memories.
In college.
Memories.
That was a long time ago, yeah. But that's really cool that you're still doing sketch and you're you know, getting your stuff out there. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, how'd you get started with that? Like, tell me about that. How's that going?
Well, I mean, basically I've been working at a Borders bookstore for a long time. And, my boss there is actually a really cool guy. He's done some shows down at the, Edinburgh Festival in, Edinburgh. And used to be a drama teacher, and he basically took over. There's this theater in downtown Tucson called Beowulf Alley, and they were trying to start up a late night program for, you know, edgier stuff and things like that. And he basically took that over. And I saw a show he did called 3 a.m. Not too long ago, like not last October, the October before. And I really liked it. And his name is Michael, and he always knew that I was a writer, and he pretty much just kind of like said that whatever I wrote, they would do. And I was like, well, okay, I'll see what I can come up with. And I wrote a first draft that was dog shit. And then I wrote a second draft that was better. And then a third draft, which was even better than that. And basically, I just kind of corralled all my friends who had either acted before, haven't acted in a while, or never done anything. And we just made a show together, and turned out really tremendous. So, you know, we've just kind of kept it up, and we've all kind of gone off, and we sort of formed like a late night committee where we'll put on shows, and we'll all kind of get together to sort of form like a brain trust as far as what we're going to do next. And they're all doing a sort of contemporary version of Madea right now.
Okay.
They're rehearsing. And
I thought Madea was a contemporary version of Madea, but okay.
Yeah.
And then she goes to jail.
I don't know. I'll still see it. I like those guys. And I'm writing something else, something else new right now that's going to be really depressing, but hopefully really funny too. I don't know yet though.
Well, that's cool. So, okay, now this is all in Tucson, Arizona, so it's a little remote, but for Tucsonians who might want to check it out, where can they see your stuff?
Well, that's another thing we're actually trying to work on right now is we're trying to figure out our own sort of portal. Because we're late night, we don't get the same sort of access as the main stage shows. We basically have to work around their sets, and it's been kind of a hassle, and we don't get as much like play on their website, and as far as promotion and stuff, we pretty much left our own devices, but we're trying to figure out some ways around that right now. so I guess if anything, you can just, I mean, I'm on Twitter and whatnot, so I'll definitely be posting some stuff there once we finally get everything off the ground.
And just to be sure, you don't have any undocumented workers performing in your show, right?
Well, I am undocumented, and we are all undocumented, but we don't make any money, so it's all right.
There you go. Okay, so you are also a movie nerd, obviously, right?
Tremendous, yes.
Yeah, on this podcast, we encourage movie nerdiness, and it is totally summer movie time, which is, in spite of the fact that, you know, I love awards season, I love all this snooty, high-minded stuff, summer movie season is all, like, you know, you kind of feel like a teenager again, you know, you're going and hitting all the big, stupid-ass blockbusters, and we're right at the top of it. Did you catch Iron Man over the weekend?
I did, yeah.
What'd you think?
It's exactly what you would think a movie called Iron Man 2 would be. I don't it's such a paint by number sequel. It's not bad. It's just, you know, entertaining for what it was. You don't feel like you wasted your money, and then you forget about it the next day.
One thing I noticed, and somebody made this criticism, I enjoyed it just fine. It was actually pretty forgettable. Like, I walked out going, well, that was fun. And then the next day, I had forgotten about it completely, which isn't bad. You know, it's confection. It's supposed to be a confection. You know, and they did a decent job with it, I thought. And I enjoyed the interplay between the characters. But one thing somebody pointed out, and this is sort of similar to, I mean, obviously it's a much better film, but this is similar to that horrible fourth Indiana Jones movie.
Yes.
Tony Stark, as a character, does not grow or change or learn anything through the course of this film. His character doesn't go anywhere.
He gets really sullen, and then he makes a new element out of a Disneyland diorama. I mean, that's yeah. Change.
He extracts unobtainium from the Disneyland model. But, I just noticed that. Like, at the end of the film, he's the exact same person he was at the beginning of the film. And so, you know, the best sequels, I think, tend to develop the characters a little bit. And in this one, it just sort of gives us the obvious romantic conclusion the first one was pointing to. And then that's it. That's a little disappointing, I think. I would have liked to see that character grow a bit.
Well, I mean, basically what the movie was doing was just setting up a whole lot of Avengers shit, which, I mean, if you're a huge comic book nerd, that's like catnip. You're just, you know, playing in the sandbox and having a great time. But if you're like me and you don't really give a shit, that's just, what is this character? Why is Scarlett Johansson in this movie? She's not really doing anything. Oh, she punched a guy. Well, that's cool, I guess.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, it usually annoys me when directors cast themselves, but I give Jon Favreau such a pass that it didn't bother me that much.
Well, he's just a naturally funny guy, so if he wants to put himself in his own movie and be funny, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So it is summer movie season, and we're right at the top of it, and so I'm sort of curious, like, before we get into anime, what are you looking forward to this year?
I'm going to probably just end up seeing Gladiator 2, a.k.a. Robin Hood, just because, why not? I'm definitely, The Human Centipede opens here on Friday. I know it's not at all a summer movie, but I'm totally excited to be incredibly grossed out and offended.
Oh, yeah. Hey, what's that about again?
Can I say?
Yeah, you can say.
Okay. It's a big-ass-to-mouth joke, but made into a movie with a crazy Nazi scientist who likes to combine people's mouths to other people's butt cheeks and then make a literal human centipede.
You know, here's the thing. Hollywood just keeps making the same old movie over and over and over again. I mean, that old canard. I mean, come on. I'm not sure I'm going to see that. I might. I don't really have a thirst for that kind of thing, but I might, you know, it's been getting some positive notices. So just in terms of, like, you have to see this incredibly weird, fucked up thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it looks okay. I'll see that before I see Marmaduke.
That is definitely true. Or Furry Vengeance, now out in theaters.
Oh God. Or the fourth Shrek movie. I cannot believe they made, well, I can believe they made another one of those, but the third one was so horrible. Like, horrible. Those movies are terrible.
I walked out of the second one and I was like, yeah, I'm kind of done with these.
You walked out of it, or you left the theater thinking, I'm finished with this?
I left the theater thinking, I just suddenly no longer care about any of these movies at all for any reason.
They seem like they're for sort of like dumb families, you know? Because now,
yeah,
there's,
I mean,
like, now
they're
like,
inoffensive, and if you need something stupid to pacify your kids, I guess that's cool. But I'm, you know, an adult, and the first movie at least had some semblance of like a story to tell, and then the sequel was just a bunch of lame pop culture jokes and Smash Mouth songs, and no.
Yeah, now it's like farting babies jokes, which is just like, the minute there's too much like wacky baby humor, that's when I check out.
Baby Geniuses 2 is just enough for you.
Oh, God. I never saw that, but I've heard the stories. I think the thing I'm looking forward to most is probably Scott Pilgrim.
Really?
Yeah.
Not Inception.
Oh, yeah. Well, Inception. But my inner nerd is just like, Scott Pilgrim. Like, I really can't wait to see that. Especially because it's Edgar Wright. And that man knows how to make a fun movie. And everything I've seen so far just looks like a blast. Like, even the Universal logo at the beginning is done in 8-bit NES style, which is just catnip for me. Like, I can't stay away from that. But Inception, yeah, you're right. It you know, in terms of being an adult, yes, Inception looks like the best thing. But my inner teenager cannot fucking wait for Scott Pilgrim.
No, I mean, Scott Pilgrim's definitely, like, my number two, and that's my inner nerd is just going to be tickled pink, both because I do enjoy the books a lot, but yeah, just video game references, even acted out by Michael Cera, will still make me happy. I will still pay money for that.
Yeah. Well, the thing I liked about the comics is that there are video game references that are sort of oblique. Like, it's not...
Yeah, it's like Clash of Demon Head instead of, like, Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Who the fuck remembers Clash of Demon Head?
Well, I
Nerds
do.
Like us.
Yeah. I still have that cartridge, actually.
Great game.
Yeah, it was. And I know you're... I know what you're not saying is that... What you won't reveal is how much you're looking forward to the Twilight Saga Part 3 Eclipse.
Oh, my God. I've got my fan fiction already written out.
You know what? I have to admit... I am kind of really curious to see what they're going to do with the fourth one of those movies.
Because they just signed Bill Condon on, so...
Yeah, but by all accounts, now, I haven't read it, but what I've been told is that it gets fucking insane at the end.
Like, yes, there's a vampire C-section.
Right, well, what I've been told is that, like, Edward can't fuck Bella because his monster penis would destroy her or something like that. So he has to get the werewolf kid to impregnate her, and then she has a monster baby that, like, breaks
Eats her
all
out
of her...
from the inside, yes.
Yeah, breaks all of her ribs. Like, first of all, get David Cronenberg to direct this, please. Like...
Also, the werewolf kid imprints upon the baby and falls in love with it as an adult.
What?
Yes. That happens.
Bat shit. And you know, the sad thing is, I am sure the movie version will be completely safe, totally toned down, will not actually show this for the fucked up mess that it is, and it'll make it all seem...
I don't know, like, I'm expecting great things from the man who made Kinsey to just kind of throw out all that and just literally film all that disgusting, repellent shit. I'm so looking forward to that.
Yeah. Anyway, I think it's going to be a pretty decent summer. Overall, there's plenty of stuff I'm looking forward to. There's something, you know, pretty much every weekend. Okay, so we should probably talk about anime on this anime podcast. Have you seen anything recently?
I did. Totally out of left field. I was on Hulu a couple days ago, just kind of, you know, trying to kill some time. And I saw two episodes of Birdie the Mighty Decode.
I've heard good things about that.
Yeah, it was pretty good, but it kind of came and went, and nobody really talked about it much. In fact, I kind of forgotten it even gotten licensed, so, you know, I was like, oh, check it out, because I liked the OAV show that came out, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, and it was good. I mean, it kind of reminded me a lot of, like, Blood Plus, kind of, where it's, it doesn't really work as well when it's kind of dragged out to a series. Like, there's a lot of unnecessary characters, and story kind of drags at points, and it's a lot of setup for very obvious payoffs later, and you know, but I mean, the characters there that are interesting, and the animation is really good. The one thing I will mention that kind of drew me out of it is that it had that problem where whenever they go into space and they're spaceships and they're all 3D rendered, it looks like an entirely different show that you're watching that was just edited in at the last minute.
Well, remind me what that is about. I have no idea.
It is about a intergalactic policewoman who inhabits the body of a normal teenager.
That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. And then there's like some, you know, secret organization after her and yada yada, you know, standard stuff.
Sounds totally standard to me. Well, that's interesting. So that's on Hulu.
Yep.
Cool. People can check that out. The thing that I popped in was the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood Blu-rays, which got...
Hey, how those look?
They look fine to me. Problem is, as has been pointed out on sites like Fanboy Review, the show is not actually animated in 1080p or even 720p. Actually, I don't know what resolution it's animated at, but it's not full HD. The way Bones is doing it is on a budget. They're animating it at a lower resolution and then upscaling it for HD broadcast. Now, it looks better than 480p, but it's not full HD. And so the Blu-rays, again, don't really look 100% like full 1080p high resolution. But they look fine, and they look certainly better than a DVD would, and they certainly look better than a lot of the other upscales that Funimation has put out. And I'm not certain Funimation knew about this while they were mastering it, because the set does have a sticker on the front that says Native HD, which I guess they've finally decided to start doing that because so many people were complaining about their previous releases not being full, honest to God, 1080p. So this one they put Native HD, which I guess is technically true. I don't know. That seems a little weird to me to choose this title. I would have put it on Evangelion 1.11, which is full 1080p.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Yeah, except for the fact that it was sort of cheaply animated, and so there's a lot of like aliasing and digital zooming and stuff. But yeah, so I mean, the problem ultimately is the show itself is not grabbing me, and I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just done with these characters. I'm done with this story. I'm done with this scenario. But I watched, like, somebody told me, like, oh, you got to get past like 5 or 7 or something like that. So I got.
I think it was 15 when they say that it like moves on and does its own story.
15. There's only 13 in this set.
Well, we got to wait for the next one.
Yeah, well, I got through 7 of them. And I'm like, man, I don't want to waste any more of my time watching this. Like, I've seen this before. Maybe I'll just skip to 15, like, when the next one comes out.
And yeah, I mean, that's probably what I'm going to do. I only got through about 4 when they were streaming them, and then I was just like, you know, I've seen this show before already. I liked it a lot back then, but if I want to watch it again, I'll just pop the DVDs in that I already have from the show that I already like.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a non-starter for me. I mean, I've taken some shit for that because it's got its rabid fans. And, you know, it's not that it's low quality. It's not that it's poor quality. It's just that it's literally like watching a remake of something you saw last year, you know, and it's not particularly different or anything like that. So I don't know. I guess when the next set comes out, I'll just pop that in and give it a whirl and see if I can pick up right from there without having to slog through all the old material again.
Yeah.
So you write Answerman now.
Yes, I do.
We should talk about that. How's that going for you?
Oh, it's going really well. I mean, thanks again for giving that to me. Yeah, it's fine. I just kind of pop on and answer questions and post ridiculous things that people send to me and yada yada, you know. I'm sure you know all about it.
Yeah. So it's not wearing on you at all? You're generally enjoying, you know, the interaction with the fans?
No, it's not. I mean, it's it just kind of is what it is. I'm still kind of shocked that, because I'm not anywhere near the encyclopedia of knowledge that you know, most everyone else is, but you know, I guess the answering the same questions week after week isn't really bothering me. I mean, there was a brief moment, I think a little while ago, when Chris Beveridge posted that anime is better than U.S. animation and here's why, and the internet exploded into a giant pile of shit. There was about like 3 weeks or so where I was getting the same question from that, and that kind of bothered me because you know, I would always get the same question, like, well, I actually think anime is better than Western animation because, you know, all Western animation is Family Guy and SpongeBob. And I'm like, well,
no, it's
you can't.
Not.
Yeah. You're just basing it on anime is better than what you've seen. It's like, you know, saying, well, anime is better than live action. You're like, well, what live action have you seen? I've seen all of the Kickboxer DVD sequels. Oh, yeah.
Anime is better than this straw man that I've built. Yeah. No, that was pretty irritating. Well, not only that, like, you, I mean, when I quit, I was so burned out and just like lashing out at the fans, and I was like, you know, this grizzled old guy in his rocking chair throwing his empty whiskey bottles at the kids on his lawn. And
I've seen you hurl whiskey bottles. You can get them pretty far.
Yeah. And you know, quitting that column was one of the best things I ever did because I completely refreshed and just, you know, came back to enjoy my job and enjoy anime again and stuff like that. But you're not generating anywhere near as much sort of, I don't want to say bile, but I guess bile is the word. you're generally more upbeat, I think. Not afraid to say the truth, but not doing it in a dickhole-ish way like I sort of occasionally was. So I think that's good. I think you might actually have a longer maybe not a longer career than I did doing it, but certainly for the long term.
Well, that's nice. I mean, it was certainly because I wrote The Click before I did Answer Man, which, in case anybody's unfamiliar, was the weekly TV column, and oh my god. Fuck that shit. I mean, it was fun to write, but you know what wasn't fun was the literal 7 hours I would spend the day before collecting all the data I needed from websites, from TV channels in Canada that I had no idea existed, and trying to slog through their awful flash menus and try to dig up episode numbers. And
and every single week there would be something, oh, you forgot this. And it's like,
this obscure TV station that's channel 400 on my DirecTV showed, you know, Venus Wars. Oh, God.
On channel -82 in Singapore, they're airing Evangelion right now. Why didn't you include that?
Shoot me.
Yeah. Well, so Answer Man so far is a fulfilling experience. Like, you're not burning out on the fans or anything.
No, absolutely not. I think it's really cool, you know?
Anything that you want to change or anything you'd like to see the column turn into?
Not necessarily at the moment. I haven't been given a lot of time to really think about it lately just because of all the other stuff that I've been doing, like theater-wise and whatnot. But, yeah. There's definitely a few things that I was kind of thinking about going forward. Because I'm not necessarily controversial, it's hard for me to get honest-to-God flakes that aren't, like, offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, on a moral level, you know?
Actually, in the last one, I didn't want to run it. You actually got, like, honest to God, like, I'm a misanthropic douchebag hate mail about poor Carl Masek, you know?
And I didn't actually send you the MS Paint version he did where Carl Masek was literally in hell. It was the most repellent thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing where it's like, I don't want to give this guy, and I realize talking about it on the podcast is sort of, but, you know, his words are not there. We're not giving this guy a voice.
Time of day.
Yeah. I just didn't want to run it. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with just not putting the worst elements of fandom on display for all to see. Because enough people read that column to where that's probably the loudest voice they'll ever have. And why give it to them, you know?
Yeah.
So So you don't get, like, trolls, you get legitimate, nasty, screwed up people.
Yeah, there was one guy that I can probably still dig this up. He it seems like whenever I get anything about hentai, I get just the weirdest people. There was the one guy a week ago who wanted me to uncensor everything, which was interesting. But there was this one guy who took exception to some hentai comment I made, and then he was like, oh, there's plenty of vanilla hentai, which, you know, is like not as dirty. Here's this Excel spreadsheet I made with a list of every hentai with every known fetish that goes into it, and you can follow the vanilla column down and get the titles you want. And I...
What?
Yeah, no, seriously, I'll have to send it to you. It's
oh,
like,
no, really, I don't want that.
I just know that if you have it, there will be one point where you'll be kind of drunk at your computer and you'll be like, what the hell, I'll open it. And then you look at it and you'll just cry.
He really had an Excel spreadsheet of, like, every hentai and everything included?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's to eat with, you know, the speed of masturbation, dude. You know, it's time-consuming.
I think I know what that guy does in his spare time. Sew the asses and mouths of teenage girls together.
Human Centipede, the documentary.
Yeah. Okay, so we should probably go ahead and get to the show itself. We're doing something a little bit different today. We're kind of doing an Anime News Network staff call-out. We're going to have Theron Martin, who's a obvious, you know, he's been writing for us forever. He's a staff critic. We're going to have David Cabrera, who, in addition to his blog, writes the Astro Toy column for us, and he's the successor to Rob Bricken. And then we're going to have Erin Finnegan on, who has her own podcast, Ninja Consultant Podcast, and has taken over Shelf Life from Bamboo. So we're gonna chat these three folks up, and we'll go ahead and get to the first one. First up on the show today, we have the duo known as Ninja Consultants, Aaron and Noah. And Aaron, as you all know, has taken over the towering task of writing Shelf Life every week under the expert supervision of Bamboo. Hi, guys. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey. Thanks for having us.
Yep. It's a colossal task.
Yeah. So I guess let's talk about that first before we get into your other stuff. Now, you took over what is probably the hardest column to write on the site, just from a sheer man hours that have to be put into that thing. How is that working out for you?
It's a lot of man hours. I'm gonna say, like, I don't know, in terms of freelance writing in general, most jobs pay pennies on the hour, and so this really isn't that different from other anime review gigs in that way. It's unusual for me because I have to, like, we normally would not watch, I would normally not watch all the anime that came out in a month. So that's unique. You know, I would kind of, like, filter things out, and especially, with Noah and I watch a lot of anime together on weekends, and generally we pick series that we both will like. And if there's a series that I like that Noah can't stand, I'll watch it, like, by myself. But with Shelf Life, we kind of just end up watching everything.
Whatever we get. And I gotta say, with 40 episodes of Dragon Ball 40 episodes of Dragon Ball Z.
This is the new shipment.
And now 13 episodes of Dragon Ball Z Kai. Like, that's 93 episodes of Dragon Ball. That's insane.
We're wondering how Bamboo stayed sane for as long as she did.
You've only got 10,000 more to go.
We've never seen Dragon Ball Kai, so that's new at least.
Well, Kai is condensed down to only 100 episodes.
Only. Yeah. Oh, they're really restraining themselves.
Well, the original was, what? Was it 200? Brian, do you know it was 200 or 300?
It was about 275, I think. Sorry.
Not listening. I mean, I have seen, like, most of Dragon Ball Z, like, back when it was on Cartoon Network, starting from the Frieza saga. I think I watched it all the way to the end. So it's a lot of it's stuff I've seen before.
Right. So not only do you have to put in a tremendous number of hours to watch all of this stuff, so your opinions aren't just, you know, sort of made up on the spot. Then you get to deal with the incredibly thankless task of dealing with our forum users.
You've got some interesting folks on that there forum.
It's true. I think people very quickly divided into like my supporters in the forums, like people who seem to really like me and dig my style and taste in anime, and then people who are like, oh, well, you just have the opposite taste as me. And I really think that like for people like that, some of them were sort of like, oh, I'm not going to read this anymore. But like if a reviewer really has the opposite taste of you, like the exact opposite, that's great, because then if they'll hate all the things that you like and love all the things that you hate. So that's a perfect filter for viewing. I like the forums a lot. It's really great to get a bunch of feedback on the writing. And it took a while to get used to, like, every forum has its own kind of, like, online community. I guess that's true anywhere you go. And so I had to get used to, like, the Anime News Network kind of, like, community, where, like, they've had certain discussions in the past, and they know what's going on within kind of that forum community. But I only really have time to follow threads about my own column. So it took kind of a while to jump in there.
Well, I mean, not to downplay your previous writing efforts, but I can't imagine the stuff you've done in the past has ever really gotten this much feedback.
Gosh, no. Like, even our podcast, like, when we started podcasting, we got a lot of feedback. Like, people would email us and leave a lot of comments. And then after a few years, when there were, like, a lot more podcasts out there and we podcast a lot less, we started getting, like, much less feedback. Also, the podcast tends to be people who generally like us and agree with us. I wouldn't say it's, like, a positive echo chamber, but I think the forum and the column are more read by, like, people who just read the site every day and don't necessarily aren't looking for me personally. Like, I'm just someone who jumped in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the column is read by hundreds of thousands of people. Like, literally that's how many readers you have. It's a lot. You've maintained Bamboo's audience, which is really important. Which is very important, let me tell you.
Oh, wow. That's terrific.
That, yeah.
I don't think we knew that. Any change in readership?
I would say I don't know that. I mean, the numbers haven't gone down at all, actually. It's completely stable, which we're very happy with, by the way.
Well,
but as a result, I mean, it's just it. So it sounds like you're still seeing, like, you're still getting the positive out of it. It's not, it hasn't turned into a negative experience for you.
You mean the forums or the watching all the anime? Because those are two separate questions.
Oh, okay. Well, both.
Yeah, the forums, it's still kind of new, or I really think there's like this bizarre sort of misconception in the forums that I've really had to tackle about like what the purpose of the column is. Like, they don't really understand like why shelf life might be different from other reviews on the site. And then also like the purpose of reviewing in general seems to be a meta topic that continually gets debated, where I always go back to like how, I know it's horrible to talk about too, but I always go back to like how my parents read reviews of movies and newspapers, where they would buy two or three newspapers back in the day when there were actually newspapers to buy.
Yeah.
And then they would compare the local reviewers, like, and they would be like, oh, well, you know, the person in whatever Hillsdale County, they're always too nice, and the person in the Jackson paper is too harsh, and like they look at the Detroit paper and they'll be like, all right, well, in between those three reviews they could figure out which movies they wanted to see. So it's like a purchasing kind of decision, like investing your time and money in which movie you want to see. And I kind of think of shelf life as that kind of thing. Like, people out there are reading reviews of anime all the time, and I think a lot of the people in the forums when I review shows, they've typically already seen those shows, so they're coming at it from a weird perspective. Like, and I don't know if they're just only some of them act like they're not comparing other people's reviews, or that I'm trying to speak for A&N in some definitive way, which is not true at all. Like, the point of the column is like a personal sort of view of this one like character reviewer. It's not like, you know, the main reviews on the site. They're like the more formal things. But I don't think everyone in the formally gets that.
Well, they don't get it until we say it. And I'm in there with you usually trying to fight them off.
Yeah, thanks for that.
But it's – they don't – what they're looking for is an opinion that agrees with theirs. And it all boils down to that. I can't see it through any other filter. You're disagreeing not because there's something fundamentally wrong with the way she's doing it. You're not disagreeing because she's like technically incorrect. You know, she's not writing these reviews the right way, which is how they try to frame their argument, to try to make you seem objectively wrong rather than just a subjective disagreement.
Well, that's the funny thing that comes up periodically. People say essentially, well, you're not being objective about this. And, well, it is, after all, a review. So.
Right. The meaning of it's a subjective opinion in the first place. But it does seem like the more the shows are that people, like, when there's a show that people take really personally, when they really love it on some deep level, like Clannad or whatever, like, then they take it really personally when I don't like the show. And it's sort of like, and they try and frame their arguments in a bunch of different ways. And, like, I understand if someone, like, hated My Neighbor Totoro, I would be like, well, you know, I guess, first of all,
no soul.
You're
That's
defended.
Because you're second, retarded. Yeah.
Yeah. Second, you might not have a soul. And third, I'm done talking to you. Well, I'd hear out their reasons. It's like, really? Did something traumatic happen that you hate Totoro? Like, you know, that sort of, I guess, because I feel very strongly about Totoro, but.
Oh, you were born with a black undead heart. That's why you hate Totoro. Yeah, no, that really does get irritating that people can't just talk about their opinions. It has to be about who's right and who's wrong. And often with this sort of thing, there is no right and wrong. It's just what you thought of a cartoon. So, yeah, that gets pretty frustrating. What's the most painful viewing experience that you've had? Like, where you just, like, you just...
Oh, that's... Oh, it's so hard to decide.
Popotan is definitely up there.
Yeah, Popotan was pretty harsh. I had to watch all of Strike Witches, though. I tend to watch the anime that I know Noah will hate, like, on Tuesdays when he plays Dungeons & Dragons, so he didn't have to watch, like...
And
they're really choicely bad titles.
Very grateful.
It's not like Strike Witches was bad in terms of quality. I think Popotan was the most offensive.
Popotan was actually hard to look at.
It was also hard to look away, like a car accident.
It's the sort of thing where when someone is being so, like, shamefully annoying, you can't meet their gaze. I was embarrassed to be in the room with that playing on the television.
Wow. Like
it wasn't just that we had to watch it. It's that we had to, you know, be in the same room with it.
It's a good thing Noah doesn't write the column, by the way. But it's like, wait, I've forgotten what I was going to say. There's a bunch of Sentai Works hasn't sent it yet, but there's like one that's called Indian Summer or something. They always show the trailer for it on their other disc, and it looks like all underage girls running around in like very little clothing. And I'm like, oh my God, if that comes to me in the mail, like I'll be arrested. Like my anime collection
will be seized.
Yeah. The FBI will come after me. I just know it.
Wow.
So I'm a little worried about that sort of thing.
So it's the lowly stuff that really squicks you out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, I don't end up writing these things, but I read them before they go up, and I'm often asking myself how one could review these titles in a way that would be resonant with the forums. That is to say, I know that there's a market for it, not just a market, but people who somehow, and I can't get it, but somehow have an aesthetic appreciation for those titles. And so I'm wondering what the terms of review would be.
See, that's like, and that's something that I've kind of struggled with, because I at Last Day X I had to review the Gurren Lagann movie, and mm-hmm. So I was like, well, Gurren Lagann the show didn't really do much for me, but I'll see the movie. And then it was like, at the end of it, even for fans of that show, that movie literally does nothing for them.
Really?
it just kind of like failed on both counts, really. Because it was just, warmed over rehash.
I still haven't seen it yet. Is it like Oh, so is it like, is there new footage or is it just recut?
Yeah, there's some new footage. There's some spiffy animation there, but I mean, it's just basically cutting out a whole lot of what made the story for the first show at least somewhat interesting, to just focus on the one-dimensional characters, which are the worst part of the show.
Oh, that's too bad.
And it actually, that brings up another point about how, with, for instance, Evangelion gets repackaged and repackaged and repackaged, and you know, allegedly tightened up and spruced up and so
apparently
forth.
The third movie is going to be like new stuff.
Well,
and the second movie has more new stuff.
Maybe it is, but it's trying to review these buffed up titles. You're kind of, I feel as though you're kind of relegated to discussing the technical specifications and very little else, not just because it's a well-known popular title that everyone knows and has seen, but because, you know, how many times can you go over the same points?
Yeah, I'm really worried
with just minor changes.
I'm worried about reviewing Dragon Ball Z in particular. Like, surely there are so many reviews on the internet and in magazines, like, already, like, what new do I have to say about it? Like, I haven't gone around reading a bunch of other reviews of DBZ, but I'm sure they're out there. I'm wondering, like, why would anyone bother to read my review of that? Like, everyone's seen it. Everyone's probably read about it in a bunch of places. Like, what am I going to say that's, like, new or something?
Just do what I did. For Anime Jump, I reviewed, when the Platinum EVA discs were coming out, I reviewed it as a third grade book report.
Oh, in like a new voice. Like, and now a review of DBZ by a total hillbilly who's never seen a cartoon from Japan.
Yeah, I mean, that's my take on it too, is that although people want us to review those things, the writer doesn't necessarily have anything new to say about it. A number of years ago, I had to review the 10th anniversary of Ninja Scroll, the DVD release. Now, at that point, I was like, there is literally nothing I can say about Ninja Scroll that has not been said. Everybody has an opinion on this. Most everybody has seen this, at least back then. Most of people had seen it. I think nowadays you'd have a difficult time proving that. But so instead, I reviewed it from the standpoint of, is this relevant anymore? And basically came to the conclusion, Ninja Scroll is not what anime is anymore. And sort of took that spin on it. And I really love that kind of content, and I encourage people to do it. And we take a lot of shit for doing that every now and then, as I'm sure you may have seen people still leap all over Carl Kimlinger for his review of Death Note as bullshit adolescent power fantasy.
Which is accurate.
Right, that's very accurate. I mean, but he had the balls.
Still like it.
Yeah, it's good, but that's what it is. And he had the balls to take a review, because he had reviewed Death Note 4 or 5 times at that point. He just said, okay, I'm just going to tell the truth about this show. And it was 50 pages or whatever of people just screaming. And it was an okay discussion for a little while. And I'm glad it generated so much talk. But you know, that's the only way you can write provocatively or interestingly about these shows that everybody has seen and everyone already has an opinion on. And going back to what you were saying before about how most people that are reading these, the audience for your reviews, have seen everything you're talking about. That's how things have changed. Nobody really uses it as a product guide. They use it as a launching point for a discussion. And I think that's good. I think that's valuable.
Yeah. I like the discussion aspect of it, where like people really do start trading opinions back and forth in a fairly civil way. And I assume it's because the forum culture is there and it's really well regulated or well policed. So that it's not just, you know, doesn't turn into some weird 4chan thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Although I kind of wonder though, because I mean, it's certainly true that there is discussion, but I recently read somewhere that hearing your own opinion parroted back to you, if you're looking at a brain scan, it is the second biggest burst of pleasurable chemicals in the brain.
Like dopamine.
Yeah, the first being orgasm. So just below orgasm is hearing your own beliefs echoed back to you.
So what you're saying is Fox News is literally fucking the brains of their audience.
Well, I think Fox News, but not just Fox News. I think that's pretty much the case,
like,
with
NPR does
every
it too.
Yeah.
Sad.
With every not news, you know, every tastemaker, essentially.
Right.
And this is nothing new. People they like to read what they like to read. Or watch or what have you. It's just I find it kind of interesting, because it really does strike me that people read these reviews in the hopes that they will hear what they already believe.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's obviously evident based on the forums the forums response. I mean, I spend a good chunk of my time in the forums telling people, hey, here's what this boils down to. You disagree with his opinion. Not anything right. else. There's nothing else to it. You just disagree, and that's okay. And tell us why. Now, I don't know if you. Speaking of Strike Witches, going back to that. You mentioned you had difficulty, how do I talk about this show without just focusing on the icky, lowly aspects of it? And with that, I actually experimented a little bit and hired a super fan of the show to review it for our full-length review. Our full-length review was written by somebody who loves the show and loves that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the right thing to do, too. People in the forum, seemed to really appreciate that, The formal review was someone who really liked the show, and then the shelf life review is my opposite opinion, and so it balanced out well.
Right, and what I liked about the way that turned out is that you both agreed that the production values were very high and of high quality, and that the animation was really nice.
That's true,
and that's cool that somebody looking for the middle ground can find the middle ground that way. The problem is this is in the past. This guy is the first guy I've had. Who is a big Moe fan and is polite and pleasant, easy to work with, and a halfway decent writer. Those are
it's
really
hard to find all three. Yeah,
yes, it is. It's very hard to find all three because the Moe fans tend to be younger. They tend not to have spent a whole lot of time, writing for a publication or writing to an editor's standards. And a lot of times their attitude is, fuck you, Zach, so it's hard to find.
Oh, they already have a bias against
them. Yeah. But this guy's, we're going to have him back whenever there's a title like that pops up to provide sort of the formal review for it. Not that we're never going to have Theron or Carlo or whoever review those titles, but when it comes to a show like Strike Witches, which is a ticking time bomb waiting to happen, we're gonna bring that guy in to pinch hit. Just because, and the other thing is I'm trying to service our audience. I'm trying to give our readers what they want, and they clearly want somebody writing about Moe who is sympathetic to their taste. And we haven't had that. We just haven't had that because it's rare among professional anime writers that somebody's into that. And clearly you're not, you don't really buy into that whole, the Moe culture. So
I mean, I want to be clear on my stance on Lolicon for people on the podcast is I'm not pro censorship. I'm pretty anti-censorship, and I'm borrowing a quote from someone famous that I've now forgotten about, but I just wish that Lolicon didn't exist. I'm not going to try and destroy it. I know a little bit about the history of it from talking with Ed Chavez a whole lot, and the manga cast vertical guy, and I know a lot about Lolicon. I don't like it, and I think that it's whatever, it exists in Japan and that's fine and there's an audience for it, but we don't have to import it to this country where certain state and local laws might really be against that sort of thing. But I mean, you can get it online anyway. I'm kind of it's weird that there's a demand for it. I also think that with Lolicon kind of propagating itself on the internet so much, it kind of creates fans. There are a bunch of people out there, reading the internet and reading image boards on 4chan or whatever, looking for pornography and wank material. And a lot of it, if Japan happens to be producing a massive amount of Lolicon wank material, people are going to wank to it. And it kind of creates more fans. Normally, those people would have never seen anything like that and wouldn't even consider that. They would just be looking at regular pornography starring adults or something.
Well, and I'd also actually really like to ask Zach, because you as you say, you come into contact with so many fans of Moe. What is going on there? What is your estimation of why the market has been created? Because it didn't exist. It didn't exist 10 years ago, even, and now it clearly does. What happened?
Well, oh my God. Well,
I realize that this is not what this whole segment is about, but I would like to know.
Well, I still want to talk to you guys about your podcast and
of course,
something
of course.
Else. But personally, I firmly believe that the Lolicon thing is an extension of a number of cultural factors in Japan have created a perfect storm that makes a market for this sort of thing. You have a trend among anime fans to become hikikomori, you know what I'm talking about, the shut-ins obsessed with two-dimensional women. Well, here's the thing. Like, it's sort of a perfect storm. So you create moe, which is intended to be protective feelings of a little sister character.
Right.
The obvious extension of that is that it turns masturbatory. It turns sexual. You don't just want to protect little sister. You want to fuck the little sister.
But I mean, in terms of the market that's created in an American audience where now these titles are being imported and finding a real niche.
Okay.
Because I understand the Japanese aspect of it. Don't get me wrong. Or I shouldn't say I understand it, but I'm aware of it.
Okay, I think I understand what you're saying.
I would have never guessed.
I understand what you're saying. I think personally it was created like any other fandom gets created. There's this underground edgy, like, it's seen as being edgy, it's seen as being taboo, and there are people that automatically flock to that kind of thing just by its very nature. You could say the same thing about, you know, punk rock or whatever, although, God, I hate to draw any comparison between the two, but...
But you're saying that this is sort of just a shock the bourgeoisie kind of thing.
I think it starts out that way. I think they eventually become legitimately attracted to it. They're eventually legitimately drawn to it. Their desire is genuine. I think the community is self-sustaining in that these people all sit around on message forums telling each other how awesome they are for loving, flat-chested little girls. That creates a fandom. That creates a culture. That creates something that sustains itself, you know, by its very nature. And I think that's a pretty simple way of breaking it down. It's just like any other subculture. The people basically sit around in a circle jerk and talk about how much they love it. And, you know, that's like any fandom. So, you know, and it's growing big enough and it attracts misanthropic teenagers who are living on the edge, you know, want to be part of it. And so it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. At least that's my off the top of my head theory about that. Mm-hmm. I personally do think it's kind of a cancer. You can enjoy whatever you want behind closed doors. I don't care what you beat off to at all. You right. don't have to talk about it in public. You don't have to be an advocate. You don't have to lobby for it. I mean, just jerk off to it and shut up about it. You know, I mean, why do these guys need to have a soapbox? I don't get it. No one's trying to keep them down, you know?
It's true. It's like, I think of it like furry fandom. It's like, okay, furries, they can exist, but I'm glad at some point in the 90s, furry fandom became separate from anime fandom because I don't want people to think I'm a furry because I like anime. I also don't want people to think I'm into lolicon because I like anime. You know, if you walk into the dealer's room in a con and it's like all hug pillows, I don't want people to be like, look at that and be like, oh, this is how Aaron spends her weekends, purchasing hug pillows.
Yeah, well, and then you get the argument, and I've made that argument before. It's like, man, I don't want to be painted with your creepy brush. And then the argument is, well, man, I don't care about what other people think. Well, that's great for you, but mm-hmm. I'm an adult living in America, and I do care what other people think of me. I don't want to say what I do for a living, and I do this for a living. This is my full-time job. Right. Oh, I work for a website called Anime News Network. Oh, and then they like pull their kids closer to them. I don't want the
FBI to bust my house because I got screener copies of Enya Summer or something. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. Like, there's a point where it's just like you're taking it too. Like, okay, you like this edgy stuff and it's totally taboo and great, awesome. Shut up about it. Like, damn, you know.
I just don't want it to crowd out other stuff in the production pipeline, and I really do now feel like it is
right where the slates become full of like studio works of just kind of moe
because there's only so much money to go around.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you know, the stuff sells character merchandise and it sells overpriced Blu-rays with three episodes on them, and that's why they keep making them, and they haven't figured out what the next thing is yet. When they do, we'll start getting a ton of that, but for now it's moe. So.
Yeah, and I was trying to say that to someone, I think, in the forums or something. I'm like, you know, it's just the trend lately, and like whatever the next trend is, that'll fill the production slates next. Like, it's probably not here to stay forever, except for, like, as a smaller niche or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, 10 years ago, if you'd have showed me Air or Canon, Clannad, and said, this is what anime is going to be in 10 years, I would have said, well, getting out of this!
I quit!
But there's more stuff being produced. Like, this, certainly this season, there's way more for me. Like House of Five Leaves, Tatami Galaxy, Giant Killing, you know, really interesting, cool,
Giant
fun
Killing
shows.
Is,
I bookmarked it, but we haven't had time.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't know that Giant Killing was
Ed is like
actually
the biggest
adapted.
Fan of
yeah,
Giant Killing.
Ed worked on that.
He constantly tells us the plot, like whether you ask or not.
On the manga, that
Giant
is.
Giant Killing,
of course.
Blah blah blah. But finally, there's an anime, so I can watch that.
Yeah, yeah, it's quality. It'll probably never get licensed because it's a sports anime. But
right.
Yeah, it's there,
and a soccer anime to boot.
Yeah, exactly. Two things Americans don't like. So, it's there's more this season that gives me reason to hope. Like, I'm definitely way more upbeat about what's coming out now than I was last year. Mm-hmm. So it's all good. But back to you guys. So you both have sounds like pretty wildly divergent tastes, or at least Noah, you seem to have a very specific taste, and I sort of want to nail that down. What kind of stuff are you into? Because Aaron talks about your reaction to things a lot, both in the column and elsewhere, and I'm curious about your take on things.
Well, actually, I don't know how specific it is per se. I know that I don't like sameness, which is a problem in anime as a medium. I think that a lot of those titles do everything in their power to become.
I think we should describe what we each like, and then correct each other. So I'll tell you what I think Noah's taste.
All right, go ahead.
Noah likes anime that's based on seinen manga titles and really like thoughtful stuff that's generally for guys. Although he will surprise you and like classic titles like Marmalade Boy or Heroes Greenwood because he watched them back in the day. But mostly, like, he likes Black Lagoon. All the Ghost in the Shell series, because it's like there's a philosophical element, there's also action, and there's some high production values. And what else do you? I'm like,
but the problem is
it's a very narrow kind of.
It's I don't think it is narrow because I also I really like
movies.
Nana. I really like Hikaru no Go.
It's true.
I like typically titles that have real human emotion in them, and it doesn't get phoned in. Which I find, you know, the vast majority of the titles that come over that we're now watching, this is stuff that I would not normally watch because it feels, you know, it feels like a copy of a copy of a copy.
Or you don't like hollow characters. You liked Tower of Draga because it had a bunch of Dungeons & Dragons elements.
That's true. I certainly have, you know, buttons that get pressed, guilty pleasures, and I guess something like Tower of Draga, which it was unique. You know, there are elements to that which are divergent from what would otherwise be a paint-by-numbers, game adaptation.
Oh, you're really into Gwyn Saga.
And, yeah, we watched Gwyn Saga. Gwyn Saga is pretty good. So it's easier for me to say what turns me off, and that's predictable, cliched characters.
Harem comedy.
Yeah, well, harem shows in general, but that goes along with the predictable characters. Because we were just talking about what was the one that we were watching last night, the lesbian show.
Oh, Aoi Hana. Yeah, that's gonna be for this week's column.
So this is a show, shoujo ai, I guess, really.
It's Yuri.
Or it's just Yuri.
It's straight up Yuri.
It's straight up Yuri, but. Something that Aaron said counted against the series was that there's a childhood friend character who then returns, and this is the pairing. This is the ultimate pairing. And although we haven't seen the entire series yet, I thought it could actually work in an interesting way where you have two characters who are childhood friends, and then they split up. They have separate lives. They both discover that they're gay. And they are reunited, and now they have this very weird place that they exist in.
That's kind of your prediction. I mean, they haven't really discovered that they're both gay at the beginning.
No, but that's a cliche that could turn out to be unique.
The way they're handling it is really good. Like, a cliche thing, when it's handled really well, it feels like you're seeing it for the first time. And, like, a lot of anime can be kind of, like, derivative and rehashing the same, like, plots and characters. But when they're really doing it right, you feel like you've never seen it. Like, with Gurren Lagann, it uses a lot of ridiculous like cliches and sameness of other shows, but when they do it, it feels, for, to me, it feels fresh, where I'm like, I haven't really watched that many giant robot shows, but I'm always like, wow, this show's great. I don't really feel like it's a horrible rehash of 10 previous series put in a blender and then served to you in some horrible smoothie of sameness.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's true of all entertainment, especially, you know, Hollywood movies.
Yep.
That's true.
Anything you see where it's like, boy, I feel like if you start feeling like I have seen this movie a dozen times,
predict what they're going to say next.
That's when that's when the story has failed. Yeah. I felt like that about, like, you could even call it, like, okay, obvious technical and visual wizardry aside, Avatar felt that way to me 100%.
Like, oh, yeah. Don't get me started.
Yeah, Noah flipped out. Like, when we left the theater for that, he was like, my dad was like, wow, that movie, like we saw with my parents, my dad was like, that's the finest movie I've seen in a long time. And we're like, oh, why do you say that? And he is sort of like, well, there wasn't a car chase in it, and I never got bored or fell asleep. And then we turned to Noah, and Noah's like, that's the most offensive, irresponsible movie I've seen, like, ever.
It's certainly, yeah.
He was like,
say it's
red
most,
with
most
anger.
Irresponsible, offensive science fiction film I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of sci-fi, really.
Yeah.
But I think most audiences don't really take it that harsh. Like, they're just sort of like, well, you know, that was okay, and don't think that much hard about it, or realize, or have the sort of like film education to know, or have not just seen the hundreds of films to realize all of like the kind of generic stuff in it.
And I think to a certain extent,
it is
comfortable, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that
it's not challenging.
In particular, fantasy novels, where I had to stop reading them because each one was like the other, but you get this sort of phatic experience of the very first time that you picked this thing up and you read it and you enjoyed it. Well, you're getting the same thing in a different way. And for whatever reason, that just makes me feel tired and old.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. Like, it's supposed to be entertainment. People get entertained by different things. People can like things for whatever reasons they like. As movie nerds, we tend to notice things. You know, people with a film education tend to notice things. And, you know, that's
Noah and I,
go ahead.
Sorry. Noah and I both went to film school, but not, like, the same film school. I went to NYU for film, and Noah went to Columbia for film.
Yeah,
right. And so, you know, and I went to a state school for film. But, so thanks for making me feel
a lot of money.
Completely,
yes, you did.
Inadequate. Yeah. We look at things in a different way. Your eyes change when you go through all those film classes. You know, your hearing changes. You notice things. And the regular audience doesn't, and that's fine. But we're the sorts of people that actually write about movies. And so
the regular audience leads happier lives because of it.
Well,
I don't think so. To a point. But when there is a movie or, you know, a series that I am really fanish about, it's like a religious experience waiting and watching this thing, where those things which do really interest me, I get really into. And of course, that's what makes me a fan.
A nerd.
But I think that I end up appreciating that stuff at a level that the average viewer just doesn't. It's an experience that they don't have. And so I'm sad that I have to sit through so much stuff that feels to me to be, you know, kind of a waste. But I'm happy because I do get these, you know, the real moe, the burning.
The burning, yeah.
Yeah, it's a different it's enjoying things on a different level, not necessarily better. I mean, I would argue better, but on a different level. Like, okay, what you're talking about, that emotion where you're just like, it's like holy experience. It's like, it just grabs you, like your soul. My all-time favorite movie is There Will Be Blood. And the first time the first time I saw it, I was like shaking when I walked out. I was like, I've just seen genius. And there are people who walked out of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen saying that. And that's fine. That's great for them. But my movie's better. You know, when you get that education, when you really learn about it, the things that you get to see, the things you get to appreciate are just so much better than a Michael Bay joint, you know? I don't know.
Well, it's not just better. I feel like, because better, it's tough. You know, different things can be better. But I feel like narrative is important because it gives you insight to the human condition. And something like Transformers, I mean, I didn't see it, so I can't say for absolute certainty, but that's my expectation that's spectacle.
Yeah.
And spectacle is it's different. It doesn't enter in the same realm. I mean, spectacle is, it's not art, it's not narrative, it's entertainment. But what you get out of that actually improves your life, that's entirely the realm of narrative and art.
Some Joseph Campbell stuff there.
Just proving that Brian's not asleep.
Yes, I'm right here.
Oh, wake up.
I actually don't know. What is your favorite movie?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Standard nerd answer. I love Memories. Like, I just love that movie to death. Magnolia is pretty high up there, too, going on the Paul Thomas Anderson road, though.
He's my favorite director.
I saw that movie like 2 or 3 times, and I don't think I would ever watch it again. I liked enough to watch it twice in the theater.
Whenever I've got 3 hours to kill, it's time for Magnolia.
God, how can you take it? Like, it's so emotional.
I'm not saying I don't weep like a little girl. I'm just saying I enjoy it.
Well, you just want to, I want to kill some time to cry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Aaron I, can't
play
handle.
Lots of Hug and Bear, and then get the little candles going. Some red wine. It's a good night.
Aaron, what's your favorite movie?
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
So there you go.
Because I made a bunch of standards for my favorite movie in college that were sort of like, I had to have watched it a bunch of times. It had to be over 10 years old, and it had to have been my favorite movie for a certain length of time. And now I don't repeat view movies like I used to, because there's just so much new content. And also I have the wherewithal to continually obtain or purchase new content. So, but there was a point where I watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail like so many dozens of times and had long parts of it memorized.
By those, by your standards, the ones you just picked, my favorite movie of all time then would be Rushmore. It's a close second. But Noah, what about you?
Well, there's the answer that I gave in film school, which people have been ragging me about.
I had to see that movie.
Ever. But
Sodom, right? It's Caligula, right?
Caligula.
Solo, 120 Days of Sodom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my troll face answer. No. Although close, maybe. I wrote my thesis on Tarkovsky, and when I saw it, and I have seen it a couple of times, I was really taken with Nostalgia. It's one of his later films.
This is a movie so boring that like the characters are taking naps on screen, and I envy the characters. I'm like, if only I could fall asleep.
It is an incredibly long movie, and
it's like 3 hours.
The truth is that there are, I'd say, about 15 minutes of that film, which may in fact be the greatest 15 minutes of cinema, without being pretentious. Unfortunately, the movie is incredibly pretentious. I don't think that that's true anymore. I don't think that's my favorite film anymore. Now, I think I would have to swing with 2001, and the reason for that is that no matter how many times I watch it, I always get this sense of being lifted up at the end and realizing, you know, oh my God, this is going to happen. You know, we will eventually go into space, and it's going to be awesome and incredible. And no matter how many times I see it, that feeling is never weakened.
That's what you said about Wings of Oniamis as well, like on our podcast.
Yeah, that's Wings of Oniamis. It's probably not my favorite anime, but I do get the same sensation.
Yeah,
from right. Watching that.
So we're getting close to the end of our time here, and we've fully ridden the train to movie snob town. Like, I think if Justin were on this show, the show would literally implode from the snobbiness. So
next stop, pretension, snob town.
Yeah. So speaking of that podcast, briefly, just in the short time we have left, tell us about the podcast. What is it? Where can people find it?
It's the Ninja Consultant Show, and if you go to ninjaconsultant.com, it's there, or you can search for Ninja Consultant in the iTunes store. It generally comes up. We've been running it. This will be our 5th year anniversary of the Ninja Consultant Show.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hooray! And we started doing it when there weren't that many anime podcasts in the iTunes store, and I never buckled down on a singular format, and Noah doesn't like doing straight-up reviews, so it turns into a bizarre discussion show.
Kind of like what we're doing now.
In our long archive, we have interviewed all of our friends on it, and eventually we got microphones and a mixer and stuff. So I don't recommend starting from episode one at all. Like, please don't do that. Start from somewhere in the middle or the ones that are still on the iTunes feed, and then work backwards or whatnot. So we used to do it way more regularly, and the shows were short, and then we started doing like longer sort of hour-long nonsense, and now we're down to like once every other month. For a while, I was trying to do once a month or just matching when Anime World Order put out a show, but they got really productive recently, and I was writing this column, so I haven't had time to do the podcast.
But I think that the next thing that we're going to do on the show is how Japan responded to the, or how you see
Japan's economics crisis in the 90s,
right? So
through the lens of anime,
during the end of the bubble era, anime started to reflect the declining fortunes of the Japanese economy, and we're going to do a show on that, which is it's topical, I guess.
Yeah, it's because the same thing's happening here, so it's good to know. But our last show was a really serious like look at Black Lagoon and like terrorism and stuff, and we were really worried for a long time that we were going to get like a bunch of nasty political email, but instead we only got positive feedback. People were like, hey, great show, keep it up.
Nice. Another one. Excellent. Okay, well, listen, thank you guys so much. That was a lot of fun. We definitely want to have you back sometime. Thanks again. That was a lot of fun. And hey, good luck with all that Dragon Ball. Okay, our next guest is David Cabrera, the new writer of Astro Toy and the author of the blog Subatomic Brain Freeze. Hi, David.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Not so bad. Thanks a lot for joining us. Now, tell people who you are, because I think our audience only knows you as Astro Toy.
My name's Dave Cabrera. I've been blogging about anime for a couple years now, and I happen to luck into the toy review position. Thank you very much, Zach.
Oh, sure. No problem. You came highly recommended, and I saw your blog and said, this is the guy. And it's actually working out really, really well so far.
Awesome.
It's doing quite well. I'm very happy with what you've got, and so are the readers. You've been getting really good feedback. How's it been so far for you? Are you enjoying
it? It's been a lot of fun for me. I'm happy the readers are happy. I, you know, try to keep a balance where I'm having fun, my readers are having fun. And judging by the feedback, yeah, I think people are very happy with it, which I'm surprised they're happy with it because my choice of stuff tends to be so like out there.
Yeah.
But if I can make it fun for them and they're enjoying it, I'm happy.
Yeah, well, I think there's a difference in tone, because while Rob is a great and very funny writer,
indeed,
he was burned out on anime and didn't watch it anymore. You know, he would watch One Piece and that's it. And his column reflected that. He knew nothing about the shows that he was that the toys he was reviewing were based on.
Oh, the things the kids they're into these days.
yeah, and so you could tell in the column, you know, he didn't really know why a certain toy was a certain way. And you're still a big fan. You still really watch a lot of stuff. So the tone has changed to something I think, you know, the hardcore fans appreciate more so. So that's I think that explains that. And yeah, you do pick some pretty weird stuff.
I'm always going for a gimmick. If I see a gimmick, I'll probably throw it at you.
Well, I mean, when I approached you about the column and the first thing you wanted to do was a Golgo 13 Figma, I was like, of course. Of course this guy is going to pick Golgo 13. Like, somehow.
How could one not?
Yeah. Yeah, so tell people a little bit about your blog and your general take on things, because you have sort of a I would say irreverent. I would say that describes your tone.
I'd call it that. Subatomic Brain Freeze was something I started when I realized that I had a hit, actually. I did a gimmick post on 4chan called The Badass Manly Anime Reviewer that people listening to this might know. And I got a ton of hits to my personal LiveJournal account, which only about like 15 people, my personal friends, were reading. And I said to myself, I should probably do something with this. And that was when I built the actual blog. And obviously, I haven't had anything as large as that, but, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I've gotten a small audience, and I mean, I do it for fun, so.
So what? How would you describe your taste in anime?
My taste in anime, that's tough. Every season I pick a couple things to watch and a couple things to buy, and there's that drop off every season where, you know, two or three episodes of a thing aren't necessarily good. I end up sticking with one or two quality things, and it doesn't even have to be like a specific genre. Obviously, from my reviews, I love robots. Mm-hmm. But I won't necessarily watch a robot anime all the way through. I like shoujo.
Mm-hmm.
I like shoujo.
I like how you said that kind of sheepishly. As you're saying it.
It's one of those things that, you know, you have to be sheepish about.
I don't know about that. These days, there's anime that's easier to be ashamed of than shoujo.
And I mean, I've even got a full Marimite box set lying around here, so I like that kind of thing. And I'm not sure exactly why, but I certainly do. And I find myself watching things that are extremes, so to speak, like a show like Marimite, where literally nothing happens, versus Fist of the North Star. I think those are the two lines of cartoons I enjoy. On one side line is Marimite, where there are two episodes of girls despairing about how chocolates are going to turn out. And on the other end, it is Kenshiro pummeling a tank until it explodes.
It's just those two lines, nothing in between, right?
I go in between sometimes, but I get bored if a tank isn't exploding or a girl isn't worrying about hot chocolates, frankly. I'm a lot more likely to drop off if it's normal.
Okay, well, that certainly explains that. Now, were you always a toy guy, or I mean, were you a collector before?
I would describe the toy column as sort of a legitimate excuse to enable a bad habit. I was buying toys a lot about 3 or 4 years ago. I have said that I love Chogakin and robots and stuff, and I have a couple shelves. But I stopped about 3 or 4 years ago when I started looking around me, and I was like, my God, where's all this stuff going to go in 5, 10 years? Where are these things going to go in 9 months? I didn't know anymore. So I bought a $200 Gao Gaigar figure and said, I quit. I am done here. I won't buy anything nicer than this. And it's still one of the prizes of my collection.
Oh, okay. For a minute there, I was like, isn't that like an alcoholic going, I'm going to buy 2 liters of Grey Goose. I quit.
One last bender to finish it off with style.
One last bender.
Oh, it's exactly like that. But I managed to somehow actually cold turkey it.
Wow.
Every time I wanted a robot or something, I would just go to that. I would go to that shelf, and I would stare at my $200 Gao Gaigar, and I would poke it and say, Dave, whatever you spend $30 on now isn't going to be as good as this.
And then I came along and said, hey, you like to party?
Yeah, basically, you know, first one's free.
Well, they're all free. Good thing for you, we pay
they
for
are free.
Good thing for you, we pay for the toys.
I'm quite pleased by this arrangement, I gotta say.
It's a sweet gig.
Yeah, it is. It's got perks. I go through HLJ, I look for a thing, and then I say, oh, let my job handle this. That's ridiculous. People shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah. And I have noticed that you mentioned this in the previous column, that you're sort of swapping between something cute and then something, some sort of robot or you know, a Lupin figure or something the next day. You ever going to change that up, or is it working out for you so far?
Well, next week's column, and I won't say anything, but people will see it, is one that is sort of a little bit on both sides. As for the pattern after that, I take it as it comes. I'm going through the listings right now, and like I said, even more important than the pattern, I think, is just picking something that's going to actually grab my reader's attention by whatever means necessary.
Right.
Gimmicks are good for that stuff.
Now, I myself do have a toy collection like any good nerd, but it's only got a handful of anime toys in it. I've got a statue of Victoria from Helsing and a couple of Berserk figures. But other than that, like, I have, you know, some Big Lebowski toys and lots of Darth Vaders and that sort of thing. Brian, do you collect at all? Do you have any? Do you have a toy collection at all? You ever get that bug?
Not really. I mean, whenever I go to, like, any big convention, I'll always make sure to, like, kind of buy myself something kind of stupid for, like, you know, $5 or whatever. Or it's like, oh, I'll see a Phoenix Wright Gashapon. All right, sweet. That's mine. And it'll, you know, sit on my desk and fall off at some point when I accidentally hit it. And then, yeah, that's about it.
Oh, it's scary. Don't start. Don't start.
So,
and readers, don't start.
Right. Well, I think the point is we're appealing to the people who already have a problem. So it's sort of like an AA meeting.
I don't know. I've read some of those comments, and I think I've made some of them start.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, your column, more so than any other, gets the, oh, cool, I'm going to buy this now comments, which we always really love to see because then we tell our, you know, prospective advertisers, hey, you know. But, yeah, no, that's very cool. I'm glad that you're encouraging people to do that.
I was genuinely shocked to see that people, after the Mazinger review, wanted to buy a Mazinger toy. I felt good because I really, really love Mazinger.
So there's another website that you write for.
Ah, yes.
That I do want to talk about because it's a very interesting and I would say up-and-coming blog called Colony Drop. Tell us a little bit about that.
Colony Drop, as I said to you before we began recording, it's a fun website for guys who want to have fun. Well, ladies who want to have fun also. The genesis of Colony Drop, as somebody who's read Colony Drop might expect, is a bunch of guys I used to hang out with, well, I still hang out with, in an IRC chat room, got to talking about Gundam, and got to talking about anime, and we were always mad about anime. I love anime in equal measure as I hate anime. And I think that's the Colony Drop philosophy. We started it with that in mind. We're going to have our opinions. We're going to purposely make you mad. But we believe what we're saying. And we, most importantly, decide to have fun with it, which has, you know, been the goal of all my blogging. It's for fun. And I think if you lose sight of having fun, you're boring, man. You're boring. And that's what Colony Drop is about, staying fun and staying lazy, because we haven't finished our spring preview yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've heard virtually nothing but praise from it, myself included. I read it. It's great stuff. I mean, the writing is excellent. And, you know, I've heard nothing but good things about it. Well, okay. I've heard nothing but positive. I've heard nothing but positive reviews of the writing from people that, you know, are in a position to judge that sort of thing.
We have very polarized reactions, I'll put it that way.
Right. But right now, I think it's the most interesting blog out there, the most certainly doing something that's calls people attention, you know, which is much more than you can say for, oh, let's say 98% of the anime blogosphere.
Thank you very much.
Right. So that's a good thing. Even though they troll the crap out of me on Twitter, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can handle that.
You know. The Twitter account is a trade secret.
What do you mean?
Hmm?
What do you mean?
I mean exactly that. It's a trade secret.
Okay. Whatever.
Some secret. CNN's
the
using
things
it.
Things we gotta do to have fun, man.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So you mentioned like every now and like so what this season has caught your eye?
This season, I'm continuing to watch Durarara. I think it's the best thing running right now.
Yeah.
I have dropped Arakawa because I think I've experienced Shinbo burnout, Shaft burnout. That man makes too many of the same show. Even though I really like the source material, he makes the same show out of whatever source material he's handed it. Let's see. I was watching Giant Killing until I read the manga, and I said to myself, wait, why am I doing this? This is much better. So I'd like somebody to pick that up so that I do not have to read it raw. And what else is running this season? Rainbow. Rainbow is this season's madhouse anime for old men. It's going south.
Already? Really?
It was predictable to start with, but it's descended into like really, really rote melodrama. And I'm sort of groaning at it at this point, just a few episodes in, even though it was quite good to start with, and maybe it'll continue to be good. Maybe it was just this week's episode. What else am I watching this season? I can't think of too much, honestly.
Okay, now the contention is that this season has a lot better stuff than most previous seasons. Like, there's a lot.
Oh, of course. I'm watching, see, you say good stuff.
Yeah.
And then it immediately pops up. I'm, of course, watching House of Five Leaves and Tatami Galaxy on Hulu. They're both excellent shows. They have not let me down in any respect thus far.
Yeah,
Watch whatever's in the Noi Tamina slot.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I'm really enjoying House of Five Leaves. Like, it's super good, super quality. Okay, all right. Well, so I think that about does our 15 minutes. Tell people where they can find you, aside from AstroToy, right, which is pretty obvious.
You can find me on AstroToy.
Right.
You can also find me at subatomicbrainfreeze.com. The word subatomic, the word brain, the word freeze. And colonydrop.com, where I post as Dave. And I haven't done that in a while, but I'm pretty sure I'm still on the front page, so you'll find me. Awesome. That's about it.
Okay, man. Well, thank you.
Look forward to the next AstroToy, guys.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Absolutely. Okay.
And enjoy Colony Drop.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay, our final guest is longtime ANN staff critic and the most requested staff guest on the podcast. I've gotten more requests for this guy than anyone else, Theron Martin. Aww. Hi, Theron.
Greetings.
Thanks a lot for being on the show. With me is my co-host is Brian Hansen, who's here.
Hi, I'm here.
Hey.
So, dude, you've been how long have you been working for ANN?
Well, I officially came on staff, I want to say at the beginning of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I had come on because in 2004, Chris McDonald had put out a call for people to audition to be new reviewers. And at that time, it basically came down to me and Carlos Santos and one other guy. And I was the third one when they were taking two. So I was told at the time, well, we'll just kind of keep you in mind in case one of these other two guys didn't work out. Well, obviously Carlos worked out because he's still there too.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guy apparently didn't pan out. So around the end of December of 2004, Chris contacted me and asked me if I was still interested. And I said, well, heck yeah. I mean, I've been doing amateur reviews for a couple years before that for my own stuck together website, so I was happy to do it, the shift to doing it professionally.
Mm-hmm. And you were pretty active on the forums before then, weren't you?
Yeah, I got involved in the forums probably about a year before that. So I'd been around for a while, the forums too. So that I'm sure that didn't hurt my chances.
Right. Yeah. now, do you still do any anime writing for any other place, or are we it for you?
Right now, you guys are it. I still do a little bit from time to time to maintain my own website, especially back when I really started getting into Claymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of if I'm a fanboy about any anime series, it's probably Claymore.
Yeah, I'm aware.
beyond just a little bit of tinkering with my own website, this is the only place that I do any kind of regular writing for. So,
right. So how do you, I mean, when it comes to the forums, how do you deal with it? Because it can be, and I've read the comments, and we police it pretty heavily, and I have a very low tolerance for people talking shit to my writers, you know, who I refer to as my writers. But it can be kind of demoralizing, you know, when people are just constantly harping on you. But you are not a particularly divisive person when it comes to your opinions. You're very mannered, I would say, and careful in your word selection. Is that intentional specifically not to rile people up, or how do you deal with the negative comments, and is your writing tailored specifically just to be even-handed?
Well, as far as the forum comments are concerned, I kind of have learned over time that, you know, if I'm going to treat myself as a professional reviewer, I might as well act the professional when I'm dealing with people in the forums, too.
What?
So yeah, so because of that, I don't go out of my way to antagonize people unless they're really, really irritating me, and that's usually fairly rare. As far as doing the reviews is concerned, I've always tried to look at things as objectively as possible. I mean, obviously, it's not always it's not always possible in certain cases, but I've always kind of tried to model myself after some movie reviewers that I respected that I always felt kind of gave pretty fair treatment to review. So I've kind of taken that as a personal philosophy.
Which critics, if I may ask?
Well, one of the ones I respected the most is Roger Ebert.
Of course.
Yes. I didn't always agree with him, maybe only probably about 75-80% of the time, but I always respected the way he handled things. Him and Gene Siskel back when he was still around. So they've kind of been a bit of models for the kind of approach I want to take when I'm doing my own reviews.
I can definitely see his influence in your writing because it is very you're very adamant about supporting your conclusions. So talk a little bit about what you've been watching lately, what you've got coming up, what's caught your eye, and what are some of your recent, like, favorites?
Well, what I'm in the middle of watching right now, in fact, I was in the middle of watching it right before I got on for this podcast, is a series that's called Brighter Than the Dawning Blue.
Oh, right.
Or something like that. It's a series from back the end of 2006 that Sentai Filmworks has coming out within the next, I think they're due to release within the next week or two. I don't remember the exact date. And that's the next one that you'll probably see a review up from me. I also just turned in a review on the Dragon Ball box set 3 or something like that. So I've been watching a fair amount of Dragon Ball lately.
Yeah.
As far as what go ahead.
Well, we were just talking to Aaron about Dragon Ball fatigue. You feeling that? Are you feeling that at all?
Not so much, because I've learned that when looking at a big chunk of Dragon Ball content together, the fast forward button is your best friend. there's just so much in the series that you can just kind of zoom through without really missing anything.
This is where they're going to stand and stare at each other for 15 minutes.
Well, Dragon Ball isn't as bad about that as Dragon Ball Z is. But yeah, there are places, or like when they spend like 2 to 3 minutes reviewing the previous episode at the beginning of each episode and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just kind of like, okay, I'll just fast forward it until the title screen comes up for the episode. And yeah, that simplifies the fatigue factor quite a bit there.
Are you – now I can't – Here's me being super professional. I cannot remember. Are you doing Dragon Ball Kai?
I think that is one that you were planning to send me, yes.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
I'm kind of interested. I watched the first episode when it came up streaming, what was it, last year, I think. And there is actually a fair number of episodes at the very beginning of Dragon Ball Z that I never got around to seeing.
Oh, okay.
I think I didn't come in until about the point that... I'm totally spacing his name at this point. The guy who ends up being the big rival for Goku.
Vegeta.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but yeah, that's
big,
about
the big large dude shows up and gets bigger.
Yeah, that's about the point where I really started watching DBZ. So I'm kind of interested to see how they've condensed things and kind of catch up on those early episodes that I missed too. So
what about it? What about the gig, reviewing anime? What about it is personally rewarding for you? What do you take away from it at the end of the day that makes it all worth it?
Well, there's a couple of things aside from the obvious that I do get paid a bit for it.
And free anime.
That's just really a minor thing in the whole picture. What I like about it is that it gives me an excuse to watch stuff that I might not otherwise be inclined to watch. And sometimes that doesn't always pan out, but sometimes I've discovered some real gems that I might have otherwise missed just because they're not within my normal sphere of tastes. And that's one of the things that I find most satisfying about it. And the other thing is, too, I've just always liked kind of analyzing and reviewing things and stating my opinions on things, and this job gives me a wonderful excuse to do that.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about the general workload of it. Obviously, now you are one of the most prolific contributors to our grueling preview guides. How do you feel about doing those? Is that fun for you to enjoy that time of year, aside from the fact that you know, you rake it in a little bit when it's done, because we got to pay you, you know, what it's worth. How is that experience for you? How do you feel about doing those?
Well, I will say, and I'm not sure how aware the people that read those guides are of this fact, but that is by far the most time intensive activity that we do for ANN, especially if you're trying to get a big bulk of the reviews, because not only are you having to spend the time watching each of these episodes and doing the individual rule reviews for each one of them, but you also have to kind of stay on the ball and try to get that stuff available to you as soon as possible. And that makes for a kind of an intense couple of weeks. So I generally try not to be doing anything else major during those times. As far as how much fun it is, well, honestly, I think it's quite a bit of fun, because I like the whole idea of just sampling pretty much everything that's coming out, and also seeing if people agree with me or not on what I'm seeing. But yeah, it is a lot of work. It's a lot of time commitment there, and that's why you often don't see too many new reviews coming up while we're doing that, because we just don't really have much time to do anything else site wise while we're taking care of that business.
So we got a few questions for you, but the major one that we got for you was people really want to know about the scores. But people really want to know, how do you weigh those? How do you come up with those grades?
Well, that's often kind of a tricky thing to decide upon. My general standard on this is that if I'm going to give something an A grade in a particular category, that means it's one of the best things that I've seen recently or overall for that type in that category. For example, if I'm giving something an A grade in story, that means it's something that's I consider top of the line in that category. I just don't give out those grades very casually. Mm-hmm. And A-plus grades, well, if I'm giving something an A-plus grade, that means it's the best I've ever seen in that category. And so I only give those out maybe once or twice ever per category. So those are not frivolous grades for me if you ever see me give one to a series.
What A-pluses have you given out?
I did give an A-plus on writing to one of the singles of Koikaze.
Really?
Which I still think is the best written anime series I've ever seen.
Koikaze is the one, for people who don't remember, about the brother who wants to nail his sister.
Well, it's more than that.
Though. I know.
That's what makes it. And there's also an age difference on top of that, so that's what makes it kind of sticky.
Right.
But it's a wonderfully, wonderfully written series, and it's one of those series where pretty much every line is exactly right, and I cannot think of another series that I can honestly say that about. There's some other ones that are really good, but just not quite. They just fall just a little bit short of that level. As far as like music is concerned, I think I gave the final volume of Princess Tutu an A-plus in music. And right. If you've ever heard that final volume, it's really hard to argue that point, because not only is it some of the best music that you've ever heard on an anime soundtrack, but the music basically becomes the story as much as it supports the story. And that's just something that you can't see anywhere else in anime. And I don't, as far as other characters are concerned, I'm not really sure. I have to go back and look.
Right.
Those are like the two examples that spring to mind.
Just to poke Brian with a stick.
Hi.
Yeah. Now you're not have you ever heard the siren song, the call of doing anime reviews?
Well, I mean, I used to do them all the time for Anime Jump, and
right.
Man, you know, good times there. But I mean, I don't know. Like, it's not necessarily that I don't enjoy reviewing things. It's just that it's just kind of it feels rote to me. I just don't think I'm particularly well suited to it. You know, like it just kind of, again, it feels like I'm just doing a book report in school. You know, I like stuff and I like reviewing it. I like kind of picking it apart, you know, intellectualizing a little bit. But I don't know. It's not really something where I'm just like jumping up and down and looking forward to throwing myself into that market again, you know?
Right. Now, if you had to pick an A-plus, you know, something you would give absolute top scores to, what would it be?
Oh, I mean, I mentioned Memories earlier, but, I mean, that's one for me that just kind of earns its marks in just about every category. You know, just your standard issue Miyazaki stuff. You know, stuff that really kind of achieves something greater and really earns it. you know, like Millennium Actress, that sort of thing. And then, you know, on an individual basis, you can kind of put, you know, like maybe an A-plus for like the dub of Cowboy Bebop or something like that, you know.
Right.
Or like visuals, or Akira gets an A-plus in visuals.
Now, there's a lot of talk about reviewing something, quote-unquote, just for what it is. Now, that's a phrase that gets thrown out to justify all kinds of really stupid opinions. Pretty much everything is A-worthy, if according to many, if you just review it for what it is. Now, I've always taken that phrase to mean you need to review this based on what it's trying to do and whether or not it succeeds at what it's trying to do. But that idea has sort of been twisted into a everything is good if you look at it through the lens of it not being a total failure on every level.
I don't buy that at all. I've kind of from back in my late high school days on kind of taking a philosophy that there is such a thing as quality, and quality is real, and that's what has to be respected the most. Yeah, you can give a bit more of an edge to a series if it's being really good at what it's trying to do. And a recent example I could think of that would be, well, honestly, To Love Rue. I mean, yeah, it's a fantastically trashy series, but it's trying to be a fun fan service fest, and if you look at it on that level, it succeeds wonderfully. It's one of the best pure fan service fests that you're going to see anywhere. So it's not really that great a series in terms of you look at it in terms of like, oh, does it tell a good story or anything like that, but it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It dishes out the fan service, it dishes out the laughs, and makes no bones about the fact that it is a fan service fest. And because of that, I ended up giving it pretty good marks. Now, is it an A-worthy series? Well, no, definitely not. It's not again what I would consider a quality series, but it does what it's supposed to really well. So those are the kind of series that I would probably give like a B-plus grade to, even though they're not really great series.
So transcendent. So genre work really has to be transcendent in order to get into that A category. It's really got to be.
If you're just talking about something that's purely a genre work, most of the stuff that I would give like A minus or A grades to would be stuff that's just plain out good across the board.
And I mean, that's kind of the problem with reviewing anime in general, is that every part of it is a genre work. It's a part of a genre that's a part of a genre that's a part of a genre. You know, To Love Rue is a fan service comedy harem show sort of thing, you know. So it's just kind of subcategorized to such a ridiculous extent that, I mean, to me, just kind of grading it on the merits of what it achieves within its own genre just becomes just kind of mind-numbing. Like, I can't even wrap my head around it. Whereas, you know, one of the best shows I've seen recently was probably Eden of the East, you know, where it doesn't really have much of a genre. It's just like kind
no,
of
No, it doesn't. It's, that's, really, that's, a very, that's one of the hardest ones I've seen recently to classify. But, yeah, that's... If you want to see an example of what an A series looks like, that's one of them. Because it does, not only does it do all the technical stuff well, but it's different. It takes a different approach to things. It's creative in what it does.
And it's also funny. Awesome, it's also dialogue. Got lots of comedy, and it's smart.
It's got some
and
comedy. Right,
it gets
exactly.
All of its references correct, and it references a lot of contemporary movies, and it gets those right. It's just perfect outside of its genre. And inside of it, yes, it's an anime show, but that's about it, you know. Whereas I just mentioned, you know, the Gurren Lagann movie, it's a giant robot show, but more specifically a parody of 70s giant robot shows. And yeah, just subgenre after subgenre, it just kind of gets exhausting.
But Gurren Lagann, though, is a case, though, where a genre show basically transcends what it is. And that's a show that I don't really feel that way about it, but sure.
Well,
I know there's different opinions of that. I would say it does, because what it does, it captures the spirit of enthusiasm of anime, the spirit of energy that is inherent in a lot of anime as well as any anime series I've ever seen.
It basically I just think it uses a lot of melodrama and a lot of, you know, cheap one-dimensional characters to just kind of show a lot of really cool stuff happening on screen, which, I mean, yeah, on a visual level, I think it's terrific, but, like, it's just a flashback to a genre, you know, that I'm not that familiar with, sadly, and I don't think many people are, but I guess I'm wrong because lots of people love it. But, you know, whatever. And I don't think it's a bad show by any stretch of the imagination. Just for me, it's just not a terribly interesting one.
With that show, I would describe Gurren Lagann as gleefully wallowing in what it is.
Exactly.
It is a show. The difference between Gurren Lagann and let's say, I don't know, Fafnir, is because it feels like the people who are drawing Gurren Lagann give a shit. Like, it feels like they care and they love it and they just can't wait to show you more. And that's why that show has such an infectious kind of fun energy to it, because it feels like the creators care. Whereas with a lot of these other giant, you know, with a lot of these other robot shows, a lot of anime, it's like, pump it out, dump it on the airwaves, buy some robot toys, you morons. You know, it just feels so lazy and manufactured. And the people doing it just don't give a shit. But I think that's
why... Daki Bakura's, goddammit.
Yes, exactly. And so that's why I would say Lagann succeeds wonderfully at what it is, I think. So we've been speaking of referencing other films. We've been talking a lot on this show so far about American stuff, outside stuff, and I actually have absolutely no idea what your tastes are, Theron, in terms of American movies and TV. What are you into?
As far as TV is concerned, there's not a whole lot of regular network type programming that I watch these days. I'm watching out Lost to the End, of course. and I'm always a fan of Heroes when it's on. And
really?
I was a big, big fan of Battlestar Galactica, the most recent one.
Yeah.
Version of Battlestar Galactica, which, again, is a show that really should have won some Emmys, because it was the best science fiction show I've seen, at least since the best parts of Babylon 5.
So let's nerd out a little bit about that. What did you think about the ending of Battlestar Galactica? Because I loved that show, and I thought the ending was a total letdown.
I thought the ending was appropriate. You had to figure it was going somewhere like that. At least I did. Especially once they made the big revelations when in the middle of that last season there about what had happened on quote-unquote Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much once they got to that point, I kind of figured it was probably going to come down to something like that. So I wasn't really disappointed by that or at all surprised by that. I did still like the way it handled everything at the end from a dramatic standpoint, though. And that's one of the things that was always great about the series. You could watch it for the action, but it also had such good drama and especially such good acting going for it. That's just not something you see every day in sci-fi series.
Well, yeah, and thematically it was just really mature, very layered. I always, you know, tell people, like, season two of that show is hands down, bar none, no exceptions for genre or anything, some of the best television ever made. Like, season two is just perfect on that show. And I guess that's why I was so let down by the ending. Even like the last season, like, I got tired of all the Cylon melodrama and all that stuff. Brian, join our little nerd fest here. Did you ever?
I've seen up to season three. Roommate just bought the big Blu-ray box set one of these days when I've got some free time and I feel the need to itch my nerd beard. I'll get around to watching the rest of the show.
What do you think of it so far?
Oh, no, it's tremendous. Like you said, I stopped following it, and then it was like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, sit down one of these days and watch the rest of them, and that kind of happened until the show ended. And it's like, well, now I've got, you know, approximately 3 or 4 weeks worth of material to slog through, so I just got to find the time for it.
Well, I think without question, it's far and away the best thing Sci-Fi Network ever produced itself.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, most of the stuff that Sci-Fi Network makes itself is complete dreck.
What are you talking about? Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Yeah, probably. But no, that was like their one shining glory right there.
Yeah.
And then if you want to go back a few years, back when it was on, I was a big fan of the whole Buffy the Vampire Slayer franchise. So again, series that I thought was highly, highly underrated. I loved it. Especially about the season two, season three stuff before it started going a little bit overboard of the seriousness. I just love the combination of camp and silly action and story that it had going.
Right.
Joss Whedon and I don't really get along. I'm sorry.
I'm on Brian's team here.
Oh, that's disappointing.
I cannot stand Joss Whedon.
Look forward to the Avengers movie.
I take it you guys didn't care for Firefly either, then?
No.
I didn't dislike Firefly. I think Firefly is the least offensive for Joss Whedon project that I've seen, but I don't know, it just didn't do a whole lot of this for me.
Actually, the only thing he's made that I personally like actually enjoyed was Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. I thought that was good. But Firefly, it was the 1-2 punch of having Firefly rammed down my fucking throat by Joss Whedon fans for like 2 years. Like friends.
Oh my god, it's the best show ever. It got canceled. It's the best show ever. You gotta watch it. It's the best show ever.
Yeah, friends of mine who are actually, some of whom are no longer friends of mine, simply wouldn't let it go. Like they couldn't believe I wasn't really all that interested in watching it after seeing an episode of it. And eventually I did see the whole thing because I just got forced into it. And I saw the whole thing and I saw the movie and my opinion of it did not change. So there
that's
you go.
Sad, because I really like the movie.
If Justin were here, he would back you up because I know he's a fan. So there you go. You're not alone on I'm certainly not alone on Firefly. I think Brian and I are actually the odd ones out on that one. But
we'll sit at our sad lunch table alone,
going, "Wasn't it good?" any movies you've seen lately, or any favorites?
The one I just got to over the weekend was, of course, Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
I love the first one, and Robert Downey Jr., I don't think they could have asked for a better casting choice for Tony Stark there. So I had to go see it. It was pretty good. I thought it got just didn't quite as sharp as the first one was, even though it had some pretty neat fight scenes in it. Trying to think of what else I've actually seen recently, though. I haven't gotten to quite as many movies. Well, I did go to see Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
And my opinion of that is it's as good relevant to its time period as the original was.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Okay, man. Well, I think that's good. Thank you so much for enlightening us and coming on and letting the readers get to know you a little bit better. I think you are sort of a man of mystery around the forums, and people don't know a whole lot about you. So I think that was great, and thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, that's our show. I'm completely sick of the sound of my own voice, as I'm sure you are. I want to thank Brian for co-hosting with me this week, and obviously thank everybody for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and until next week, Heat Guy James!